The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by Exchange Wire.
Hello and welcome to this week's Mad Tech Podcast. I'm John Still, Exchange Wire's head of content, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Exchange Wire's editorial lead, Mariam Ahmad. Mariam, welcome.
Thanks for having me, John. Great to be here.
Good to have you as always. And our very special guest today joining us from New York is Lottie Jones, CMO at The News Movement. Lottie, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Brill. Well, we've got some good news stories, some bad news stories for this week. So let's dive into the first one, which is, according to a Guardian report, ITV has recorded a really sharp decline in its annual profits. Pre-tax profits fell by 61% to £193 million in 2023. That's against £500 million in 2022. This is a result of the drop in advertising revenue, as well as some extra investment in its ITVX streaming service. That's a heck of a drop. Lottie, I'll start with you on this one. Do you think this is indicative of a downturn, an advertising downturn in particularly in the wider industry?
I mean, the short answer, I guess, is yes. However, I think there is probably there's two sort of pieces of context here that I thought were quite interesting. And one is cultural, actually, as opposed to business or creative industries necessarily. I know that Channel 4 had similar ramifications from the writers' strike and so forth last year. They made significant redundancies back in February, only a few weeks ago. And equally, I felt like the reporting on this was quite myopic, in the sense that there were some green shoots within this story, in that their studios business was up 4% and their digital advertising was up 19%. So I think rather than this sort of signaling the demise of linear TV, I think what it does show is just a shift in consumer behavior and how the creative industries and the advertising industry and Marcoms, you know, wraps itself around that is significant. I also think, I mean, I touched on the writer's strike there. It hasn't been as hugely reported in the UK and perhaps hasn't been quite as damaging. But here, living as a Brit in the US, you feel it acutely. I think the other bit of sort of missing cultural context is that this year, obviously, ITV has access to the UEFA rights. So this kind of dip represents a bit of a time lag that I think only in retrospect of 2024, when we hit December, are we really going to be able to take a call on the industry. But it's interesting, I thought, and I won't go on too much, but I thought the reporting around the sort of even the shows that they mentioned, so obviously the Post Office investigation and the Toby Jones series got highlighted, when in fact, when you pick beneath the numbers, the shows that are making ITV money at the moment, predominantly it's Love Island and the franchise titles that are so popular abroad.
Yeah, you've hit on a couple of really interesting points there. One, that it was slightly buried in the headline that there were record revenues for the studios business, which is also big news and really encouraging for ITV. And also, it could just be on a lag, and that it certainly doesn't herald immediately the death of linear TV, which we'll actually touch on in our next story as well. Mariam, what did you think of the story and what this means for ITV, particularly from the advertising point of view in this downturn?
Yeah, without catastrophizing, I guess, I think what the signals as a whole is just sort of like a pivot towards digital platforms, not necessarily the end or the death of linear TV, but I think what comes with this is sort of like the shifting of advertiser budgets to these platforms. So I guess sort of like a reallocation of funds is what we're going to be seeing more of. I also think it calls for, you know, a certain level of like adaptation and innovation. I mean, ITV's investment into its streaming service, ITVX, for example, I think it's kind of an example of how traditional media companies are adapting themselves, you know, maybe towards more hybrid models, whether that be ad supported or subscription based revenues, a mixed model approach, I guess. So this is a really interesting one. I think, you know, it's a call to action, I guess, of sort of like innovation in a way.
It does encapsulate a few of the arguments we're hearing around CTV streaming, you know, the very slow, glacially slow demise of linear TV, which is still incredibly popular. Like Lottie, you spoke about Love Island, which is still, you know, it seems universally popular, always watched and very interesting. And it does say in the story as well, you know, digital revenues rose by 19%, which is, again, you know, all part of a story which is being covered off as a loss at the moment. Lottie, in your kind of, in your experience and what you're seeing from, you know, your point of view in terms of adoption of new platforms and how people are consuming their news, their entertainment, how do you see the future of linear TV playing out, I suppose? Where are people going for their news, their information, their entertainment?
I think news and entertainment, in a way, are two very separate things. News is really caught in a push and pull situation at the moment, where I think there is an old guard within traditional media that are desperately sort of keeping the fire aflame. And there are, you know, which obviously I represent in the news movement, new players and ways of diversifying from old media as well that are starting to really come into play. You know, we know that Gen Z, 60% of them get their news from TikTok. So whether that is correct news or not is a completely different matter. But there is a necessity to fight misinformation online by more traditional medias breaking out into social media for sure. When it comes to entertainment, I suppose that is a sort of richer area in many ways, because it's really... a lot of people will feel they have seen something through virtue of the clips. The Oscars was a great example this weekend. You know, I woke up and certainly didn't sit through 3 hours of it, but I felt like I saw it just through virtue of my timeline. And I think news, you know, definitely suffers from that, that things like commentariat, opinion pieces, those deeper investigations that really stick by the rigor of journalism that we at the news movement herald are pretty few and far between. So I look forward to more traditional media adopting more creative ways, to the point that you made, Mariam, about innovation and how traditional industries shape shift around social. For me, that's a really exciting and fertile area.
Yeah. And Mariam, is that, you know, it's easy to talk about TV stories, I think, in terms of linear versus CTV and streaming services. Is the threat, particularly in terms of ad spend, from elsewhere, from social channels, rather than just another TV streaming opportunity?
Yeah, I would say so. It's kind of interesting as well, just to touch on what Lottie said there. Like, I think there's a real generational divide here, and I think that's where the issue is going to arise. I think we're going to see a generational divide in terms of sort of like what Gen Z aims for versus, you know, what the older generations aim for. Lottie mentioned something really interesting, actually, and I wanted to touch on that. It was, you know, using TikTok or whatever for all these social media sites to find your news. And I think that's going to sort of be the real issue there. That, and, you know, how do news streamers or news providers counter that? So that will be another one. I think that will be quite interesting to look out for.
Yeah, I think... I'm gonna dovetail neatly into our next story, because it does involve streaming as well, and we'll carry on this discussion in the background of that as well. So, second story is that more than half of US video subscription revenues will now go to streaming services. This is according to eMarketer, who expect over half of US video subscription revenues to move to streaming. Traditional pay TV services are on the decline and are set to be overtaken by OTT subscriptions for the first time. So, yeah, links into everything we've been saying. It's about adapting to the platform. Are we seeing a new dominance in streaming, Mariam, do you think?
I think so, yeah. I think this shift sort of like underscores the changing of consumer preferences as a whole for on-demand versatile like viewing experiences over scheduled broadcasts. I think that's the real change that we're seeing here. There's also an element of sort of pressure on traditional broadcasters, like we mentioned before, to sort of innovate. Like I said, it's kind of like a call to action in content delivery, and especially with, you know, sort of like monetization strategies. How are they meant to monetize this model? Obviously, there's content fragmentation on top of that. There's competition, and there's also a need for like tech investment. So, you know, I think we'd be looking at like more of a consumer-centric market, very competitive market. And at the end of the day, it's all about viewer satisfaction and engagement. So that's what I think they should be aiming for, and you know, what they probably are aiming for.
Yeah, Lottie, this study's from a US point of view, so obviously you're experiencing that firsthand at the moment. Do you think, is adoption to streaming more rapid in the States? Is it slower? How are you seeing that being picked up, and how that's affecting the TV industry?
Well, I think to sort of explain it, it's important to realise that cable obviously was light years ahead of the UK in this department and still is through virtue of the BBC and the fact that we have TV licences and that simply doesn't exist in the US. So when people talk about cable service over here, really they're talking about telly as we know it. So the fact that it's overtaken by digital doesn't surprise me because people are used to paying for their content over here. I think what is interesting when you unpick that is that for me, it feels like we've gone from a bit of a pendulum swing. So the average household pays around, I don't know, $60 to $65 a month for, say, your Spectrum subscription, which gives you the likes of Disney and ESPN, so all the sport. That's a lot when you compare it with paying $9.99 for your Hulu and maybe $9.99 for your Netflix. So the new players have obviously gone in a cost of living crisis for low price points. However, the pendulum, when you look at things like YouTube TV, which is pretty much like $70-$75 a month, you start to see that actually the pendulum's starting to swing back from having been much cheaper and more sexy over here compared to your old dullards of the Spectrum and those kind of Verizons. And it's settling gently in the middle. And I think that, to Mariam's point, is where innovation starts getting exciting and you start getting genuine competition through virtue of good programming. And at the moment, I think people are probably voting with their pockets because there is so much same-same between the categories. But I think gently, as time goes on, as you say, perhaps not with the glacial pace of the UK, but certainly in the US, you'll start to see much more competitive commissioning. And going back to our previous conversation around ITV, I think that's when it gets exciting for studio businesses. And I include BBC in that because obviously BBC Studios makes a huge amount of money per year through syndication and foreign rights. And I think that is where the likes of ITV should and are investing in order to buoy up the parent brand.
Yeah, there's a lot in that, in your answer there, that I want to pick up on. One is the pendulum swinging back. I think that's really important. You know, we have seen the streaming companies try and reinvent the wheel, and now they're just trying to reinvent linear TV on the streaming platform now, you know, with Netflix adding an ad subscription, with Amazon adding their ad subscription, with Disney Plus with ads. They have realized that the disruption and people paying for a no ad service doesn't result in profit. So the ads are being popped in. They're talking about streaming sports, which is, you know, the last bastion of linear TV is now being taken up by the streamers. And so I think that's fascinating, but brings about for advertisers in particular, the new opportunities that could really boost streaming. Mariam, do you think CTV, streaming TV, FAST, AVOD, do you think there are more exciting opportunities there for advertisers than the traditional linear model?
I think certainly from a data standpoint, because I think, you know, CTV, as advertisers know, sort of presents better opportunities in terms of being able to analyze that data and maybe reach specific demographics with greater precision. You know, you can do a lot with data-driven insights, as people know that, you know, as advertisers know through CTV. So, and through that, ultimately, you create personalized and relevant advertising experiences, which is ultimately the goal. I think at the end of the day, this sort of like tailored approach enhances viewer engagement, which is, you know, the ultimate goal. And hopefully for the advertisers, sort of, you know, improves upon ROI. There's also, of course, like the interactive nature of CTV, which is quite cool. So, you know, viewer responses in real time, that's something that is solely sort of allowed through CTV. I think it's an exciting space. It's going to be interesting to see how this one plays out.
Yeah, I think so. Lottie, have you been impressed by any CTV ad formats you've seen? Anything that you've thought is quite innovative or just same?
Out here in the US, it is quite same. That said, I mean, I can remember back in the day when 4OD first came out and went digital, and they reinvented the notion of the infomercial by partnering with brands and having Phil and Kirsty doing collaborations with British Gas. And it felt like there were this real sort of pioneering models coming forward, whereas I think to our point about that sort of pendulum swinging and time lags and so forth, actually the interstitial advertising that you get is pretty formulaic at the moment. And there is definitely room to do more exciting things. And I think that is where social is probably stealing a march when it comes to brand partnerships, and how traditional media is partnering with brands to be able to create series and excerpts and explain their stories in more detailed ways. And creating more kind of serendipity around that storytelling as well, because the difference being when you're watching a program, obviously you've got a captive audience and you know that they're going to be watching a specific program, dedicating their attention to it. Whereas I think with social media, there's more competition to get people's awareness and attention.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, I've had a similar experience to you, I think, in terms of streaming service advertising. It was, you know, it was like, oh, what fun are they going to have with this? How interesting is this going to be? It's like, oh, pre-roll. Great. Good. It's a nascent area. It's being investigated and the opportunities are certainly there. I will leave TV behind. We've had a good chat on both of those stories and move into our third story. And retailers are suffering the longest dip in sales since 2020. Consumers have cut back for the fifth consecutive month. Fashion was the most impacted category, according to Retail Gazette, with in-store sales decreasing by 8.2% last month and overall sales falling by 4.8%. Lottie, I'll come to you on that one. How is this going to be mitigated, and should the industry be really worried by these consecutive downturns?
Personally, I get quite excited about it, and I do professionally and personally, as I say, because this is an area that I identify with a lot, being victim to many Instagram ads that I have populated my wardrobe with. I would say it's definitely, it's not dissimilar from our previous conversation in the sense that I think the media does like to crown the demise or the rise of anything, whereas in actual fact, it's shape-shifting, and necessarily so. I think what social and the likes of TikTok Shop have given birth to are the independent retailers, a bit like eBay did back in the day when it first started and people started selling antiques out of their garage. So too are people, you know, the Etsy generation are starting to have so many more windows to so many more different consumers globally. And to me, that's exciting. I'd also say that, and, you know, we talk in the wake of big brands, okay, it's not fashion, but the likes of Body Shop, you know, moving online and gone into receivership. We went through the same thing with Topshop. And yet what I see is that these brands do have a second life, that Topshop's still available on ASOS. Body Shop will still be available on another site, I'm sure, in not too distant future, if not its own, selling exclusively online. And I think what it represents is a different approach that's needed. We can't rely simply on a physical footprint anymore. And having had an online retail site to complement your shopfront was, you know, those dual existences have been around for what, like 15, 20 years now. It shouldn't come as a surprise to us that the physical footprint is under threat, and yet the media would have us believe that. So for me, it doesn't necessarily, as I say, all have to be doom and gloom. It's very much like growing pains as opposed to the death of something.
Yeah, the industry is adapting to, you know, it's no longer complementary, the online and the bricks and mortar. It's now online is go to the first stop for everyone for shopping. Mariam, how do you feel about the dip in these sales? What do you think about it?
Yeah, like I'm going to echo what Lottie said there. Like I wonder as well, reading this, what sort of segment were they looking at? I doubt it was independent retailers, even resellers. So I think, and I also think it's symptomatic of what's going on. Like it's not that shocking. We are in a recession. So it would almost be odd if they were to say, oh, retailers are doing so well and profits are as high as ever, like through the roof. It's sort of expected, I want to say, you know, because purse strings have sort of tightened due to the recession. So it's nothing shocking, really. And I don't think we should be worried. I think we will, as Lottie said, sort of like find our way out of this as we have previously in the past.
Yeah, I think it was interesting that fashion was pulled up as a case in point here, because I think Lottie, you touched on it as well. We are we'd like to be an increasingly sustainability focused consumers, and fast fashion and fashion in general is often first to go when you have sites like Vinted, like eBay, like Depop, where really good clothes are available that are secondhand and next to new. It's not a surprise that fashion does take a hit and it can end up being a bit of a canary in a coal mine for the rest of the industry. But that's grown massively through e-commerce. The secondhand industry has really, really boomed. Do you think that's something that marketers are becoming keenly aware of in your experience, Lottie, anyway?
Yes, I do. And I think from two perspectives there. One, that it's given birth, as you rightly say, to a whole new category. You think about even the big bastions of eBay and Amazon and the moves that they've made into resale and secondhand used, particularly pertaining to fashion. But also, I think it's from a social point of view, it's a result of ESG and, you know, the sort of constant activism and pressure that a lot of these brands suffer, in inverted commas, from consumers. And, you know, you see H&M and brands like that coming under a lot of heat for their supply chain and even the disposal of lines that they no longer have. So it puts a healthy pressure on a different kind of business behavior. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, as well as in turn creating new categories, as you rightly say.
Yeah, it's interesting. And we'll obviously keep an eye on it, but these are poor results and the poorest since COVID lockdown, which is not good news for the industry. Mariam, any other thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think from the it'd be interesting to talk about this from the advertiser perspective. So especially within the retail realm, I think for those in the traditional sort of space, I think it's really a call to sort of like creative action. And I think that's what we're going to be seeing more of. So whether that's like, you know, market consolidation with mergers and acquisitions, we might be seeing that a little bit more, like, you know, big players sort of buying up the smaller players, or perhaps even, you know, a call to better use of data for audiences at scale, or even like, you know, like Lottie mentioned, sort of appealing to people's values, whether that's people wanting to be more sustainable or, you know, it's a call to something that is a real possibility here, and there's a real potential behind this. So trying to put a bit of a spin on the doom and gloom aspect of it, but yeah.
Well, we'll see how it goes, and hopefully, you know, there's opportunities will arise from this, and we'll see how the market continues over the next few months. That's it for the news. Before we go, Lottie, I wanted to ask you about the news movement. It's, you know, really interesting, and it must be a fascinating place for you to be working and with what's going on at the moment. Tell us how it's going and tell us a little bit about the news movement.
It's very exciting times for us. We have two newsrooms across the UK and the US with an average age of 25. We were originally conceived out of, as I touched on earlier, the fight against misinformation. So to have better news storytelling online. And as such, I think we really locked into this idea that young people were probably the most underserved when it came to accurate, rigorous news storytelling that spoke to them in a language and a vernacular that also felt attractive and appealing and they understood. So that's very much where we started. And as time's gone on, it's fair to say that we realized just because TikTok tends to over-index young, it doesn't necessarily mean that only young people want to hear the news through the perspective of a bit of a journey rather than an old white man giving you the story and assuming you know all the shades of grey in between. So we in ourselves have been on a lot of maturation since we started 2 years ago. And I think this year really marks the year where we feel 100% confident that we're really onto something. And as such, on the commercial side, we work with a number of different brands to effectively tell their stories in a similar way, marrying the rigor with journalism, with the creativity of media. So we have set up almost an agency within the organization that really meets brands exactly where they are, listens to their pain points, and offers consultancy of all different kinds. That can be internal comms as much as it is external, because in the wake of the pandemic, so many more businesses need to treat their employees as an audience. And as we know, with social media, that audience can become leaky and equally can be an incredibly powerful tool when communicated with, spoken to, and used in the right way. So it's taken us to lots of different interesting boardrooms, corporate challenges, brand creative briefs, you name it, whilst all the while building an audience that reaches over 50 million individuals per month across all our different channels.
That's fantastic. It's, yeah, obviously, you know, onto something here, and you seem to, you know, cornered a market across social. And yeah, well, I'm fascinated, and we'll definitely keep up with you, Lottie. It was really nice to get your perspective on this. And yeah, we'd love to hear more about the news movement in the future. So best of luck with it all.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And thank you, Mariam, for joining me as well.
Thanks for having me, John. Pleasure as always.
Anytime. And that's it for this week's MadTech podcast. Thank you all for listening. We will be back next week. Thanks.